Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into yet another edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinken of The Athletic. This evening, Adam, thanks as always for stopping by the studio.
Ryan, always a pleasure.
So, Saturday night, Panthers held a 2-0 lead after two periods of play. The Preds came back in the third period, tied it up at two goals apiece. The game goes to a shootout, and Vincent Trocheck scores the lone goal of the shootout Saturday night to give the Florida Panthers a 3-2 victory at Bridgestone Arena. Adam, what was maybe your biggest takeaway from Saturday night's game?
Well, here's how I would describe the first two periods of the game, and I can't come up with the right word, so I'm just going to go with a sound effect. That's what I thought of the first two periods. Really, not much happened at the beginning of the game, but as the Predators have shown early this season, they're a very good third period team. Two more goals to erase that 2-0 deficit and to force overtime slash a shootout, get the point, which they weren't able to do in a similar situation against the Los Angeles Kings about a week ago, a little more than a week ago, in the first game of that road trip, down 4-1 entering the third period, tied the game, ended up giving up a late goal to lose in regulation. And it's jarring is not the right word, but you know, when you look at the goals scored by period for the Predators through eight games, they've scored four goals in the first period, nine goals in the second period, and 19 in the third period. The next closest teams, as we're sitting here, in terms of goals in the third period, are the Edmonton Oilers and Montreal Canadiens with 12 each. So the Predators are clear of the next team in terms of third period goal scoring. And what we've seen in multiple games this season, you know, I think of the game against LA that I referenced, even though they lost. I think of the game against Washington. I think about the game against Florida. Is that no deficit seems too much to overcome, or at least surmount and tie the game, which is a good thing. But
it's, you don't want to get into the position where you are in that deficit.
Exactly. It's living dangerously.
Yeah.
To be put yourself in that situation regularly, but it speaks to the Predators' resolve and the offense that they have, that they're able to do that.
And last season, we didn't see that resolve all that often. This is something that I harped on last week. I believe it was last Monday's show with Chase McCabe, is that last season, we didn't see that much resolve out of this Preds team outside of the last two games of the regular season against Vancouver and Chicago, in which they came back and won those games that they needed to win the Central Division. 2 years ago, though, in the President's Trophy winning season, they did show a bunch of resolve, a bunch of different nights, especially in the second half of that season when they went on that long point streak, I believe it was 15 games. Mm-hmm. And they did pull out a lot of games that they probably didn't have much business winning. Mm-hmm. And they have already shown that kind of resolve here in October. I think that's a good thing. That can only do them good as the season goes along. When they do get down in a game, is that belief that they can come back and win. But you don't want to do it every single night.
No.
And they've been doing it now
almost every single night.
They had to come back against Vegas after being down 2-1 after the first period, despite scoring the first goal of that game. They had to play from behind against Arizona and then again against Florida. This is a trend that they would like to buck moving forward.
They haven't trailed as much during the season. I looked it up, I think, after... But during the Arizona game, so there have been two games added since then, but you know, at the time they had trailed through six games, I think, for 105 minutes of the 360 minutes they had played, which to me actually seemed less than what I expected. It felt like they had trailed games more often than that, or for longer stretches than that, but they haven't trailed on the clock as much as I would have expected, just based on the situations that we've been talking about. But you're right. It is a good thing that the Predators have been able to show that despite being down by multiple goals, they can tie the game, you know, with with relative ease, it seems like sometimes. But, you know, it is a dangerous proposition because, as we know, winning percentages when you're giving up the first goal or trailing after the first period or second period are not very high.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the less the Predators can do that, the better. But as you and I talked about many times last season, and I, you know, I kept on going back to the idea that last year's Predators team didn't have it, quote unquote. I feel like this team does have it, or more it than last year's team did early on in the season, which is good.
So they are now 4-3-1 through 8 games. Roman Josi and Kyle Turris scoring the third period goals to tie the game. We are going to get to Kyle Turris here in a little bit. But Adam, do you feel like this team is just kind of working through the kinks right now? They've only played 8 games. There have been some offensive changes, some defensive changes, even though there wasn't a large quantity of changes in the offseason. Do you feel like Peter Laviolette and the assistant coaches and this roster right now are kind of working through some of the kinks that you normally work through early in a season?
Yeah, I think that happens with a lot of teams. And even though there wasn't a lot of turnover on this Predators team, they did make, you know, 2 significant changes.
Yeah.
Removing PK Subban and adding Matt Duchene. So there are some kinks to iron out, as you say. And I think we're starting to see, you know, the signs of the Predators getting into that groove. The offense certainly seems to be there. The defense is what's been problematic so far this season. Now, you know, Pekka-Rinne and UC Saros have not been as strong to open the season as we're accustomed to seeing them, which makes those defensive woes look worse when you look at the goals against. But, you know, I do believe that once the Predators can smooth out their defensive issues, as long as their offense continues to be potent, this team's in a good position. So I really think it's more on what's happening on the defensive side of the ice than the offensive side of the ice that needs to be worked through. But once that gets fixed, I think they'll be in good shape.
I know they've only scored 3 goals in the last 2 games without Philip Forsberg, but do you feel like, or no, excuse me, 4 goals in the last 2 games. They did get a second one in Arizona, but do you, is this offense better to you than you had expected coming into the season?
Yes, I definitely would not. I mean, I expected them to be good. I definitely did not expect to see them score as many goals as they have. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but how many times have they scored at least 5 goals in the game this season already?
I would have to look that up really quick.
Well, you look that up. You know, I think it was after the Washington game. I asked Matthias Ekholm if this was the best or most prolific offense that he's been a part of as a member of this team. And without hesitation, he said yes. And to paraphrase, the reason why is because of how quickly they're able to click offensively, how quickly they're able to turn the tide offensively. It looks like you have the number ready.
Yes, 4 or 5 goal games.
4 or 5 goals. So they've scored 5 goals in half, and at least in half of their games.
Correct.
Not at least half, because
yes.
4, half of 8 is 4. That's your math lesson for the day.
thank you, Adam.
Yes. No, thank you. But Matthias Ekholm, back to what he was saying, it's just the ability to seize momentum very quickly, the balance that they have on their lines, you know, puts them in position to be able to score a lot of goals. So did I think it would be as prolific as it has been? No. But I expected to see an increase in goal scoring from forwards with the addition of Matt Duchene, just because, A, he's a goal scorer in his own right, but his presence at even strength and on the power play provides more opportunities for other forwards to score as well. So that's a long-winded way of saying I'm slightly surprised by how good they've been on offense, but not totally surprised.
What about the power play specifically? They got another one Saturday night.
That I am more surprised about, just because I expected an improvement, because as I've been saying throughout the season, their power play has to get better because it couldn't get any worse. That I'm more surprised by, just because I thought it might take a little bit longer. We talked about working out the kinks, especially that top unit with Duchesne, Josi, Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson when everybody is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right from the jump, they've been really good. And I don't want to give Matt Duchesne all the credit for that, but I'd like to give him a lot of credit just because his presence on that power play, being that left shot on the goal line, it just opens up so many things for the for that power play unit.
It's changed the dynamic of it.
And I really like, and one thing I like most about it is that it has removed Victor Arvidsson from having to be the net front guy. I mean, he's still going to crash the net and hunt for rebounds, but now he can at least shoot the puck more from the slot as opposed to just being the screener and dealing it with it that way. Because on the power play before this season, you know, he was very unproductive score sheet wise on the power play just because the offense wasn't really running through him. It was just, hey, he'd jump up and screen the goaltender, and if he deflected the shot in or got a rebound, that was great. But other than that, he really wasn't involved in the flow of the power play. Now he is. And now you have Matt Duchesne, who can also crash the net and hunt for rebounds and either set up Ryan Johansson on the half wall to set up Philip Forsberg in the left circle. I really do think that Matt Duchesne has unlocked this power play. That plus Dan Lambert's modernized approach to the power play has led to the success that they've had.
So the Preds fall Saturday night 3-2 in a shootout against the Florida Panthers. They'll be back at it tomorrow night at home against the Anaheim Ducks. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard right here at ESPN 102.5. The game coming up next. Adam wrote about Kyle Turris earlier today, and Kyle Turris scored his third goal of this young season Saturday night. A nice one at that. What does a revitalized Kyle Turris do for this offense? We'll get into that next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
50 seconds remain of the power play. Predators have yet to garner a shot on net during this advantage. Turris takes the puck in. His shot, he scores! Up off the shoulder! Ties the game on the power play!
The call you heard there, Pete Weber and Hal Gill for the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network. Saturday night, as Kyle Turris scored a beauty on the power play to tie it up 2-2. The Preds fall to the Florida Panthers 3-2 in a shootout. Ryan Poore with Adam Vingan here with you on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, that was a really nice goal from Kyle Turris.
Yes, it was.
Which kind of put the cherry on top of the first eight games that have been really impressive for Kyle Turris, considering where he left off last season, where you didn't really know what his role was going to be on this roster going in, into the offseason. You didn't really know night to night, especially in the last month of the regular season, what line he was going to be on a given night. He gets an opportunity in the top six Saturday night, logs a season high of ice time over 18 minutes Saturday night, and scores that beauty on the power play. What, and I know you wrote about this at The Athletic earlier today, what does a revitalized Turris do for this team?
Well, I think you just saw it, or heard it, rather. you saw it on Saturday. You heard it just now.
Yeah.
It really, we talked about the offense during the first segment, and you know, having Kyle Turris with 6 points in eight games, including three goals, you know, that really plays a factor into it. And the story I wrote, which you referenced, the headline reading, "The Predators need to give a revitalized Kyle Turris a fair shake." You know, if it wasn't for Philip Forsberg getting hurt, Kyle Turris wouldn't have been in the top six. It was the first opportunity he's had to be in the top six. And if you're going by ice time before Saturday's game, he was clearly the fourth line center on this team. Even strength ice time per game before Saturday's game: Matt Duchesne 14-12, Ryan Johansson 12-29, Nick Bonino 11-46. This is per game. Kyle Turris 10-31. For an overall ice time for Kyle Turris, 12-41 before the game the other night, which, as you mentioned, he had a season high 18 minutes 11 seconds of ice time, which was a season high by more than 3 minutes. And even after that, he's still averaging 13 minutes and 22 seconds per game, which is his lowest total since the 2010-11 season, which was his second full season in the NHL with the then Phoenix Coyotes. So, you know, I wrote in the story that ever since Peter Laviolette scratched Kyle Turris for two games in March last season, that their relationship has the feeling of an uneasy marriage. I asked Peter Laviolette before Saturday's game how receptive Kyle Turris has been to the amount of ice time he's been receiving, and this is what Peter said in part, quote, "I haven't had any conversations about it with him," which kind of struck me as odd. I would think that the head coach would talk to a veteran 30-year-old player making $6 million a year about how he has the most diminished role since the beginning of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And then I followed up by asking Peter if he is putting Kyle in the best position to succeed in his role. Peter responded by asking me, what role would that be? I said, technically fourth line center. He said, quote, "You're putting numbers on it. We listed as third, we listed as second, we listed as fourth. The numbers have to go somewhere. They don't mean anything," end quote. I disagree with that completely. They do mean something. You know, before Kyle Turris played on the second line or the first line, whichever number you want to give it, with Matt Duchene and Mikael Granlund on Saturday, Kyle Turris is clearly this team's fourth line center. And he's too good. He's shown to be too good this season to be playing such a diminished role.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe he deserves more than what he's been getting. When he played on Saturday night, an interesting thing was that he played center and Matt Duchene played right wing, which he has done before, but I don't think he prefers to do. I think preferably Matt Duchene is at center, which means Kyle Turris' only chance of being in the top six is on the left wing with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson, which they tried during the preseason, but then ultimately scrapped. But when Philip Forsberg comes back, you assume he goes back with Duchene and Granlund because they've been really good.
100%.
I would like to see the Predators give Kyle Turris another chance with Ryan Johansson and Victor Arvidsson. With respect to Calle Järnkrok, who has been fine in that role, but Kyle Turris' game is more suited for that position than Calle Järnkrok, in my opinion. So as I said, I would like to see the Predators give Kyle Turris a fair shake while he's still here and while he's willing to make it work and while he's playing so well.
Well, and you noted in your story, too, about how Bob McKenzie said on TSN last week that the situation with Kyle Turris is worth monitoring in terms of a possible trade. Now, Pierre LeBrun followed that up by saying that he believes it's a long shot that Turris moves in season. I agree with Bob McKenzie in the words that he said in the fact that it's a situation worth monitoring because of everything that you just laid out there, because of what he is providing right now, whether it's a second line center, second line wing, first line wing, fourth line center, second power play unit, whatever role that Kyle Turris has been in this season, he has excelled at a lot higher level than what he did last regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, I agree with you. That deserves Kyle Turris, because of that, deserves a larger role than just 10 to 12 minutes a night and being stuck on the fourth line.
The interesting situation that the Predators find themselves in is if Kyle Turris is playing so well, his value, which was non-existent last season, trade value, is now higher than it's probably been in a very long time. Definitely higher than it's been in a very long time. So if you're the Predators, do you want to take advantage of that by being able to trade him if that were to come up, and maybe, like with the PK Subban trade, find someone who sees how well Kyle is playing and be willing to take on his whole salary? Because the Predators have never retained salary in a trade, and it would really help them, considering what's to come with other contracts, to get his entire cap hit off of their books. But why would you want to trade Kyle Turris when he's playing as well as he is right now?
Mm-hmm.
Especially because you're not going to get equal value back, because he's still a 30-year-old player with 5 years left on the contract that pays him $6 million a year. So while he is more valuable to the Predators on the trade market than he was this summer when they could not trade him, you would be weakening your team again by trading him. I mean, what would you want? What would you get in return?
I think if you're going to trade Kyle Turris in season, it would have to be someone that can help rectify the blue line if the blue line continues to struggle with consistency.
Right, but you don't want to trade him for an older veteran.
True. I mean, this is already the oldest team.
Yes.
In the National Hockey League, which kind of surprised me.
It did surprise me too when
those numbers came out.
When I dug into it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that Dan Hamhuis and Pecorine are the outliers and skew that. But, you know, the amazing thing to me when I did the research for that article is they only have one player on the roster who's under 24, and that's Dante Fabbro. You know, on the other end of the spectrum, the Colorado Avalanche, who are off to a fantastic start, at a different stage in their Stanley Cup contention window, quote-unquote, have 11 players under the age of 24. You know, the Predators are a team that's, they're a prime team, and that's why that quote-unquote window is not as big as we would think, just because of how old their top players are getting. But back to what we were saying about Kyle Turris, it really is a catch-22, because this is, if you want to strike while the iron is hot and try to find a taker, now might be the time. But, you know, as Pierre wrote, it's a long shot that it happens in season, because I think that Kyle Turris wants to make this work in Nashville. He signed long-term. His family loves it here. You know, I think he enjoys it here, even if, you know, even if his role isn't what it is, and even if he's, you know, it has a difference of opinion with Peter Laviolette, I think he's committed to making it work here as long as possible. But I think the Predators would be coming out on the wrong end of a trade if they were to trade Kyle Turris right now, just because he has been such a help. You know, take advantage of that while you still can. You can stomach the cap hit when he's playing like this. That's why you signed him to that cap hit, so that he could play like this, albeit in a higher role in the lineup. But 6 points in 8 games, that's pretty darn good. So they should ride it out while they can. I mean, tough decisions are going to have to be made in order to get this team under the cap with Roman Josi when that contract is signed. You know, it doesn't have to be Kyle Turris who is on his way out. But it really is an interesting situation that, you know, as, you know, not to you know, parrot Bob McKenzie, it is worth monitoring, not from a trade perspective necessarily, but also how they just use him, especially as he's playing well.
Coming up next, we'll discuss the domino effect of Philip Forsberg's injury. He did not practice earlier today. We'll get Adam to discuss that. Plus, I have an idea as it pertains to overtime and the shootout that I tweeted out Saturday night that I want to get Adam's thought on as well. That's all coming up next on Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinken of The Athletic. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. As always, Preds Insiders brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Also sponsored by Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford. Kerry Zier, Remax Elite. Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard downtown. Ryan Porth and Adam Vinken of The Athletic here with you. Another edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, the last couple games, the Preds been without Philip Forsberg. He is day-to-day with a lower body injury. He left early in the Vegas game last Tuesday night, missed the final 9 minutes and change of that game Tuesday night. And the offense, at least production-wise, has taken a hit. 4 goals in the last 2 games after lighting the world on fire in the first 6 games, with 4 of those games being 5 goals or more. Philip Forsberg did not practice today. We do not know his status for tomorrow night's game against the Anaheim Ducks. And unfortunately for the Preds and Philip Forsberg, him being on the sideline, I guess you could say, being out of the lineup has become a little bit of the norm in the last few seasons, where he has missed chunks of time. This one doesn't appear to be as serious as the previous ones, but it is concerning that this early in the season, Philip Forsberg has sustained another injury, and there has been a domino effect of not having him in the lineup, which should be the case because he is such a prolific scorer.
Yeah, and when you think back to his first 3 full NHL seasons, he played in every game. In 14-15, 15-16, and 16-17. Now, he missed about a month each of the past 2 seasons and a couple of games now. He did not practice today. He was in the building, though. He signed roughly 100 bobbleheads of his likeness. I would say he was in good spirits, but, you know, signing your autograph 100 times in a row on a bobblehead probably isn't much fun.
Well, it is Philip Forsberg bobblehead night, yes. Halloween night against Calgary.
So he seemed to be fine. So take that for what it's worth, which is probably not a lot. But I think the more concerning thing is just when those injuries have occurred, how he's been playing at the time of the injury. This was the best start to a season in his career, the way he was playing through 5-6 games. Last season when he was hurt, I tweeted this out before the Arizona game. Last season when he was hurt, he had 14 goals and 22 points in 26 games. 2 seasons ago, he had 15 goals and 34 points in 37 games when he was hurt. So the opportunity to have these big seasons were lost by injury.
Well, what I would be interested in is what are his numbers post-injury?
Well, because
it does feel like he slows down post-injury when he comes back after a very successful stint before the injuries that he has suffered. And, I mean, he opened the season with a point in every game.
Yeah, longest
this season.
Season-opening point streak in Predators history. It doesn't appear that the injury is going to be as long as the other ones were, where he missed, 5-6 weeks, a month.
And he wasn't placed on injured reserve.
He has not been placed on injured reserve.
Which is positive.
And they, perhaps just because they weren't playing again until Tuesday, but they did reassign Yakov Trenin to the American Hockey League on Sunday. They kept Mika Salamaki around, which gives them 12 forwards. So perhaps Philip might be closer to coming back, unless they were to recall somebody tomorrow morning, which is a possibility. But the fact that they sent Trenin back, I think, bodes well for Phillip's status in the next couple of games. So my sense is that it's not anything serious. But it's never good to not have him in the lineup.
So 3-2 shootout loss Saturday night. And I tweeted this out the moment Aaron Ekblad committed the penalty late in overtime. Forget how much time was left on the clock. It was less than a minute left in overtime, I do believe. Yes, 35 seconds left in overtime. Aaron Ekblad called for a hook. So I've had this thought, and I had finally tweeted it out because it came to mind in the moment, is I feel like if a player takes a penalty with less than 2 minutes left in overtime, that player should be disqualified from participating in the shootout. That is a rule that I feel like the NHL should adopt. Now, Aaron Ekblad did not partake in the shootout for the Florida Panthers, but I feel like that's a rule the NHL should adopt.
I like it.
You like that?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I do think that if a goal isn't scored, of course, and a shootout is required and there's still time on the penalty, there should still be some residual discipline.
Yeah.
So I like that. I agree with you on that. I could get behind that.
So, for instance, if it's Vincent Trocheck, or let's use the Washington Capitals as example, if Evgeny Kuznetsov commits a penalty, that severely hurts the Capitals' chances in the shootout, right?
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe severe is too harsh on that, but it does affect the Capitals' ability to win that shootout.
Yes.
And it's almost like if you take a penalty late in overtime, there's very little consequence with that. I mean, the Predators didn't really have a good opportunity in those last 35 seconds. So Aaron Ekblad committing that penalty with 35 seconds left in overtime didn't really have an effect on the game. Whereas if it's a player that could be a prime player for the shootout, then it really is affecting your team in a much larger way.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting idea. The other one that just randomly popped into my mind is that if a player is in the penalty box, that the team on the power play gets an extra shot in the shootout. That might be a little bit too much. Your idea is probably better, but let's just say, the Predators need to score to win, and they don't. They should get another opportunity because of the penalty. They should get 2 chances in the bottom of the ninth, so to speak. Again, very unlikely.
Now, someone tweeted in, his name is Taylor, someone tweeted in Saturday night as I tweeted that out, saying, I think overtime should just continue until the penalty has expired.
That's interesting. Sort of like stoppage time in soccer?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I could get behind that one as well.
I still think your idea is the best one. I think it's the easiest one to implement, where it's just, hey, Aaron Ekblad not that they were going to use him in the shootout anyway, but if you were thinking about being used in the shootout, it's not happening. I think yours is the simplest. If all three of these rules changes were brought to the NHL, I think yours would be the likeliest to be approved.
Okay. Does that mean I can be commissioner of the National Hockey League?
Yes. You can be anything you set your mind to. That's what I always learned as a child.
How do you think I would compare to Gary Bettman?
I guess you can't get much worse. Gary Bettman has, you know what, for all of his, for his flaws, and he has some. I mean, I think he's been a fine commissioner. I mean, yeah. Lockouts aside, which aren't great.
I've always thought that Gary Bettman is unfairly booed the amount that he gets booed. Whatever building he goes to, he gets booed. Now, that's consistent with most commissioners in sports.
Yes.
Anytime Roger Goodell gets in front of a camera with fans around, he gets booed.
But I think Adam Silver is the lone commissioner that doesn't get booed.
But
I don't know much about Rob Manfred to have an idea of whether or not he gets booed if he's ever really in public.
This is true. But Gary Bettman, it is uncanny. Every time that he brings out a Stanley Cup or every time that he speaks in front of a crowd, he gets booed.
It's a bit now, though. Like, he's in on the joke. You know, it's like almost like a wrestling, like a professional wrestling thing, because I have to shoehorn a pro wrestling reference into every show.
There you go.
I'm sure Chase is appreciative of it. He's a great heel. He knows how to get the heat. He knows how to get the fans to hate him. You know, I think, you know, he goes onto the stage at the draft and they boo him and he's like, you can do better than that. You know, like he eggs them on. There are certain markets where maybe the booing isn't as vociferous. I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for. I'll look it up afterwards.
Your vocabulary. Your vocabulary is much deeper than mine.
Yes, vociferous is the right word.
Okay.
Mean vehement or clamorous.
Good job, Adam.
Okay.
Vocabulary, that is the word I'm looking
for. Yes. Anyway, especially here. I mean, Gary Bettman has meant a lot to the city of Nashville.
He has.
So I think people here who boo him, I think it's just for fun. And I think he understands that too. But I mean, people in Nashville who care about hockey should care about Gary Bettman because he's done a lot.
Coming up next, Elliot Friedman has started a weekly appearance on Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2 ESPN 102.5 The Game. Elliot Friedman has started a weekly visit with them Thursdays at 1 p.m. He had some interesting comments last week about Roman Josi, and we will get Adam's thoughts on that coming up next. He's Adam Vinkin of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vinkin of The Athletic. Tomorrow night, the Preds take on the Anaheim Ducks at Bridgestone Arena. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard right here on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5. The Game. Adam, last week, Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet made his season debut with Darren Donick and Chase. Thursdays at 1 p.m. will be your opportunity to hear Elliot Friedman all season long. And you'll have an opportunity to win Preds tickets every Thursday at 1 with that visit from Elliot Friedman as well. So Elliot Friedman comes on and is expectedly asked about Roman Josi. Roman Josi in the final year of his contract. Elliot Friedman reported within the last couple weeks saying that the contract extension negotiations have, quote, hit a snag. Now, he was asked about Roman Josi, still expects him to be signed at some point, probably this season, but he did throw in a little bit of a nugget that I hinted with Jeremy Cage over a couple weeks ago, saying that maybe this is one of the reasons why it hit a snag. Elliot Friedman on Roman Josi and a little wrinkle that could be having effect.
The one thing I had heard in the summer, because I had heard, guys, that there was momentum in the summer and it kind of stalled around the time where, you know, Josi, he got married and he went on his honeymoon and, you know, I think that just kind of was a natural hitch in the whole process. But what I had heard in the summer was that the Predators had made it clear that they knew that this was a different situation, that, you know, he was their captain, that things were changing in the NHL in terms of some of the things that had been happening, and they recognized that they were probably going to have to do things that they hadn't done in the past, and they understood it. So I would assume that he's going to get some sort of no-trade protection or protection, maybe for, I don't know, I don't know if it'll be more for the beginning than the end, but I think that there was, I don't know the exact ins and outs of it, but I do believe they were understanding or willing to give some protection for certain parts of the contract that were more than they usually did. I think everybody recognized that this was a unique situation with a unique player in the history of the team.
That was Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet commenting on Roman Josi last Thursday with Darren Donick and Chase. Adam, what goes through your mind when you hear what Elliot Friedman had to say there about a possible no trade, no movement clause being added to Yossi's contract when David Poile doesn't like handing those out?
I think everything that Elliot just said is reasonable, at least when you consider it from Roman Yossi's standpoint and his agent's standpoint. I mean, my understanding is similar to Elliot's, that Roman Josi is a special case for this team as the captain, as one of the elite offensive defensemen in the NHL. And you saw it with the Predators' contract with Matt Duchene. He had two things in that contract that, as we've talked about, David Poile typically doesn't like to do. One, of course, is the trade protection, which Matt Duchene has a modified or limited or whatever trade protection clause in the final 3 years of his seven-year contract. He also has signing bonus money, which the Predators don't tend to do, but is a very popular way for teams to structure contracts nowadays, where most of the salary is paid up front in signing bonus money and the base salary is very small. You know, I imagine that Roman Josi is going to get both of those things. When you think about the trade protection, I have to imagine it's going to be more restrictive than Matt Duchene's. I'm not sure it will be a full no move or full no trade, but I imagine it will be as close as it can get at the very least. And in terms of the annual average value, I think Elliot also said this, that it's hard to imagine it not starting with a nine, which has been my sense as well. No, Roman Josi on the open market is an eight-figure salary a year player. That's at least $10 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
With the Predators, when you consider, of course, the things that the Predators like to trumpet, their no state income tax, all of those things. You know, they can pay him less and he can get more bang for his buck. And I also just never got the sense that Roman Josi wants to be anywhere else but here. So I agree with Elliot that it's going to get done eventually. I never got the sense during the summertime it was going to be done before training camp. Am I surprised it's still not done? Maybe a little. I think if we get too close to the new year and it's still not done, maybe then my antenna will go up. This contract's very important. And there are risks involved. I mean, Roman Josi is going to be 30 years old when this contract starts. He has a history of concussions. He should age better than other defensemen in his realm because of how fleet of foot he is, mm-hmm. and how good of a player he is and how smart of a player he is. But he's not a physical player, so right. The body, won't break down as much you would think.
It's not like Shea Weber. I mean, Shea Weber is already breaking down with a lot of injuries here in the last few years, where Roman Josi, yes, he did have some of those concussion issues earlier in his career.
Right.
But for the most part, Roman Josi has been a really healthy and durable player here in the last few years as his stature has risen in this organization.
And as this continues to go on, and I've heard this at various points, and I even heard it with the Ryan Ellis contract last summer, that after what happened with Ryan Suter, the idea that David Poile is not going to allow something like that to happen again. And if he can't get Roman Josi, or if he couldn't get Ryan Ellis under contract, that he was going to trade them. Now, you were here for that, Ryan. I wasn't. But just from people talking to people who were here, I don't think you can compare the Ryan Suter situation to the Roman Josi situation or to the Ryan Ellis situation, because I think Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi made it known publicly and privately that they want to be here more than Ryan Suter did when he ultimately left to sign with Minnesota.
For sure.
So I understand the viewpoint, the idea that, you know, if Roman Josi isn't under contract by a certain period of time, you can't let him walk for nothing. But, you know, I don't think it's going to get to that point where you have to worry about that.
I don't think so either, but that is within the realm of possibility here. Let's say they remain far enough apart, whether it's term, well, I would assume the Preds.
It's going to be 8 years.
Term is
I'm almost certain it's going to be 8 years.
The least amount of worry in this negotiation. But when it comes to money, when it comes to any sort of trade protection, kind of feel like if they are so far apart that this could go on for a lot of the season. Now, the interesting dynamic of this is, what would David Poile do if we get to the All-Star break and there's still not a trade or still not an extension signed? Then does a trade become a possibility? I would be floored if it ever got to that point with this player and this team, considering he is one of the faces of the franchise and he's the captain. I mean,
traded captains before.
I know they have, but he is a vital, vital piece of what they're doing. And you know David Poile would not want to give up both PK Subban and Roman Josi in a span of less than 12 months.
I mean, yeah, and think about that defense. If you remove Roman Josi from it, Ryan Ellis and Matias Ekholm are great defensemen, but it takes a significant hit. And that's the thing that you have to wonder is, you know, sometimes teams go into situations with players who are on expiring contracts as own rentals, quote unquote, where instead of trading them at the deadline, you hold on to them. And, you know, like Artemi Panarin, for example, and Sergei Bobrovsky, you can consider them last year as own rentals because the Blue Jackets decided not to trade them, figuring that they were probably going to leave in the offseason anyway, as they did. But hey, we're going for it, so we're going to keep them around and we'll just take that risk. I can't imagine a trade that the Predators make with Roman Josi that makes this team better, especially when you consider where this team is probably going to be at the trade deadline in February. Like, do you want to significantly handicap your chances of winning a Stanley Cup by trading Roman Josi? I mean, again, I agree with you. I don't think we're going to get to this point where this is going to become feasible.
Not even close.
So, I mean, we're talking in hypotheticals here, but, you know, when Roman Josi signs, and he's going to sign eventually, I believe, I mean, there is a lot of risk in the contract. I mean, you think about some of the contracts they have on their books right now. I mean, you have Ryan Johansson signed until his early 30s. You have Matt Duchene signed until his mid-30s. You have Ryan Ellis signed into his late 30s. You know, 35, 36, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have Roman Josi presumably under contract until he's close to 40. You know, there's a risk involved in this.
And not only that, but the no trade clause that Elliot Friedman brought up,
right,
as it might be a likelihood that it is in this extension. And what kind of precedent does that set for potential extensions for Philip Forsberg and Matias Ekholm
and Victor Arvidsson?
And Victor Arvidsson, well,
he's not further
as close
down the road. Yeah,
Forsberg and Ekholm are what,
three years, I think.
Two years for an extension, 3 years left on the contract.
Yes,
and I could see them saying, "Look, I know you caved on Matt Duchene a little bit. You gave him some protection. You gave Roman Josi some protection. What about me?"
I think Matt Duchene cracked the door open. Like, when you look at the structure of Matt Duchene's contract with the signing bonuses and the protection, that cracked open the door, and everyone's running through it now.
Yeah.
I mean, even if Matt Duchene wouldn't have gotten those assurances, you know, I think Roman Josi was going to be the exception to the rule. But for as important as Matt Duchene was to get under contract for the Predators, Roman Josi is that much more important.
It just feels like a necessity in today's NHL. if you want to keep your star players, you're going to have to give them
and
protection.
And David Poile has done a really good job of preventing that from happening for a very long time. I mean, when you think about the contracts that he's that they have that don't have it with Ryan Johansson and Ryan Ellis and Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson and Matthias Ekholm, you know, good for him. You know, Colton Sissons, you know, good for him that he's been able to do it for so long, but you know, eventually he's going to have to cave, and it's coming. It's coming right now.
Adam Vingan of The Athletic, our time is up. As always, thank you, my friend, for stopping by here on Preds Insiders.
Thank you, Ryan. Next time, we'll have to do it off-site again.
Yes.
Like we did last time.
And we will do that again here soon. For Adam Vingan, I'm Ryan Poore. Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Preds Insiders. Coming up next is the Rick Stockstill Show right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.